It's Monday. I'm Gab. He's Jules. It's the Gab and Jules Show. Welcome aboard, everybody. We're going to be talking a little bit of Sergio Ramos and his double penalty miss while also setting a European record. Yep. That's Sergio, right?
That's
Take
him.
The good with the bad. We'll be reviewing some Nations League stuff. But shall we start with France?
France qualifying. I like it when you talk to me like this.
Hi. You go to Portugal, where Cristiano's annoying because he only scored the one goal in their friendly against, I forget who it was. Was it really Andorra?
Andorra, yeah, 7-0.
All right. So against off-brand Andorra.
Yeah.
So he's hyped, he's amped, he's ready to go. And what happens? France win 1-0. And I think they pretty decisively deserve the win, yeah?
Yeah, completely. I thought they had just outplayed them, outsmarted them. The last 20 minutes were all Portugal. They pushed hard. And by the way, you would have to explain to me why this Portugal team that is so talented, who has improved so much since 2018, one of the teams that probably has improved the most, waits until the 70th minute to play and to try to do things before that. And of course, you're under pressure because France have been playing so well. But still, I thought they were very timid. They were just not trying anything. He looked like we didn't see
Bernardo Silva. They're being respectful of the world champions.
Yeah.
Look, I mean, I will say this about Portugal, right? And I'm not going to make excuses for them, but Bernardo Silva, as we know, has not had a good start to the season.
Play Diogo Jota then.
Really bad form, right?
Play Diogo Jota.
But you have a manager who's emotional, who is a loyalist. Yeah, Jota would have been a better fit in that game, but maybe looked at it and said, Jota's played like 8 games in a row for Liverpool, he must be tired or whatever. But also, when you've got these smaller countries, it's about how the pieces are together, right? So Cristiano obviously has to play. Jean-Felix is having a tremendous season. He has to play.
Yeah.
How do you fit those two with Bernardo Silva without playing a center forward, which you can't play a center forward.
Yeah.
So you ask Cristiano to stand there. Obviously, Cristiano's not going to make center forward runs at the stage of his career. There's a big knock-on effect, right?
No, there is.
You guys in France, hey, look, we have 50 options. Oh, no Mbappe. Oh, that's all right.
No, that's true.
Hey, here's
that's
Martial.
True. Yeah. I just thought it would be more of a contest had Portugal played a bit more from the beginning. But France was so good that maybe that's what, as well, Portugal could not play. I thought tactically, Deschamps got his spot on. He's got that hybrid formation again, like at the World Cup, except that it's Rabiot for Matuidi on that sort of left-hand side. Sometimes left in a 4-4-2, sometimes a bit inside in a more of a 4-3-3 formation, if you want. Griezmann, Martial and Coman up front worked quite well together. I thought Pogba was great, Kante was fantastic, scored the winning goal as well. Defensively, they defended really well, Varane, Kimpembe. And it's when we question those senior players, Pogba, Griezmann, Varane, and they respond the way they did against Portugal, I think, okay, right, there's something special in that team.
I think that's a good point, and I think it's a good transition to our next point, because those three guys you mentioned, right? Varane had an absolute stinker for Real Madrid in his last outing. He's been up and down. Griezmann, his issues at Barcelona, well chronicled.
Yeah.
And obviously Pogba, in and out of the team. And yet they go with France, they look like different players. And that kind of brings me to my next question, because Paul Pogba spoke after the game, and as always happens when players go with their national team, sometimes, they know, 20 years ago, 30 years ago was different. But today they know that the minute they speak, it's going to bounce back in their home countries.
Yeah.
And what did he say?
He said that the national team was a breath of fresh air, which is what he's always said, which I've said many times on this show, on other ESPN shows. I wrote for the website about it. For him, it's a breath of fresh air.
For him and the other guys who are playing badly at club level. Yeah,
and he also said that he's going through at club level with United the toughest period of his career, something that he's never known before when he used to play all the time. Now he doesn't play anymore so much.
I don't know if it was tougher than when he was under Mourinho. Mourinho invented something that doesn't exist, the vice captaincy, just so he could take it away from Pogba.
True. Yeah. But I see where he was coming from. Yeah. And his point was not to be negative about United or critical about Solskjaer. Because I saw on social media a few United fans saying, oh, this is a dig at United. It's not a dig.
It's just social media. It's the papers today. You know the punditocracy in this country are going to come back on it and be like, oh, look, Pogba's being disrespectful about United.
He was explaining why it's a breath of fresh air for him to be in that dressing room around people with who he won the World Cup. Some, like Rafael Varane, they've played together since they were 16. So now they're 27. Of course, when they meet again, it's like old friends. It's like brothers. That doesn't mean it's not the case at United. He likes the dressing room at United. He's happy at United. This is not the problem. The problem is not the fraternity that you can find in a national team that you don't have with your club. Right. But he was saying that helps him to be able to play like he did against Portugal, to have that camaraderie.
You're making excuses for Pogba. I made excuses for Pogba last night. We talked about this on the FC show. But one thing that seemed to be the consensus, is Pogba doesn't help himself when he answers these questions. Because you know the backlash that's going to come. For me, it's entirely normal, right? It's not just that United are underachieving. It's that you're in and out of the side at Manchester United. You're playing, you're not playing, whatever, right? And so obviously you're going to have a different environment. But for you to come out and say that, should Paul have known that this was the wrong thing to say, but and it's going on. To so create question, more negative headlines, and when he goes back to United, he's going to get more stick
but the,
for it.
Okay, the question is, you must be happy with your performance against Portugal, because it was a hell of a performance coming out after a few weeks where you didn't play much or you didn't play well.
Right.
What do you expect him to say then? What did you want him to answer? So he said, yeah, of course, that was really tough for me, probably the toughest I've
ever
had.
Maybe not make the comparison with his time at the club.
But that's what he said about the club. And then he said, you know, when I come with the national team, these are my brothers. This is family for me. So I come here and I feel rejuvenated. And that's what helps me coming back to play at the level I did.
Right. I'm giving him the I give him the benefit of the doubt, and I actually like it when people are honest.
Yeah,
and
unfortunately, I think he really
was. Rarely players are.
And he was not a dig at United.
But equally, he's not a dig at United, but he's an intelligent guy, and he knows that that is how it's going to be spun now here in England. And it's not just an English thing. It probably would be spun that way most players in his position. So I'm just wondering, why put yourself in that situation? Was just carried away in the moment? That you have to draw a comparison? I mean, come on, it's France, it's Manchester United, right? You're talking about the world champions versus a team that's basically underachieved for 8 years.
He didn't say the dressing room at United is toxic, or I don't like being there, or I'm not happy being there. He was asked a question about the dressing room with the French national team. So he just answered. He said, oh yeah, we even take the mick out of Kylian Mbappe, because when he comes with us, with the national team, he speaks more Italian and Portuguese, because he spends so much time at PSG with Neymar and Verratti. You know, but when we all go back together with the national team, we all speak French. We've known each other for so long. We know this is family. That's the only point he made. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Right.
And by the way, he reminded everyone in England, at United and everywhere, how talented he was against Portugal.
Yeah, this was just going to do him much good next time Ole Gunnar Solskjaer puts out the 11 and yeah, his name's not on it. Jules, no Kylian Mbappe.
Yeah.
And so he gave Martial a shot. Martial, who, of course, didn't play a part in the 2018 World Cup team.
No.
Mixed reviews, but you're bullish on his performance.
Yeah, I just think sometimes you need to look not just at the chances that he missed, and he missed four easily. He hit the bar with a header, he should have scored. Then Rui Patricio was very good on two other chances. I just think he does so much for that team in that game, certainly. In the movement of the ball, with the ball, his linking play with Griezmann was very good. You saw that on the first big chance. That 1-2 is wonderful. And I think he's a kind of player who Griezmann would like to play with. And I know Griezmann likes to play with him. So I think sometimes you need to look just a bit beyond just, okay, he missed two especially big chances that he should have scored. I know you disagree.
No,
of course, he should be more clinical, but there's other things that he does well.
I think when you get to mid-career, and Martial is now at mid-career, he's not the kid he was,
he's
right?
25.
We know everything that happened. We know how hyped he was as a kid. We know all the money that United spent on him. Mm-hmm. I don't know that he's ever going to be the player that his wages suggested. I do think he can contribute for France. However, France have other options. France have other players. And what I thought was interesting was he didn't play Giroud, who obviously was a mainstay and who, as we know, is very, very well rested.
Yeah.
This and obviously there's no Mbappe. So logic suggests Mbappe comes back. Maybe he plays the Martial position.
Yeah, I think so.
With Griezmann in behind. However, I don't know, though. I that would be a big departure for Deschamps giving up his center forward. And Deschamps doesn't strike me as a particularly creative or innovative manager. He's more of a man manager and says, oh, defending counter. I've got this guy at the back who can pass. I got these guys up front. And let me give you I just wonder what happens if you play Mbappe, Coman, and Griezmann or put Martial in there for Coman or whatever, and you play against a team that parks the bus and there's no space behind and there's no Giroud or a Giroud type. Do you run into a problem?
Yeah, probably you're right. I think he's got like you said, very different profiles up front. Ben Yedder as well, I think, offers something very different to Giroud, Martial, Mbappe, and Griezmann. Coman is different because I think Coman is a pure winger.
Probably yeah, at least Ben Yedder is a centre forward.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So, but I think he will depend a lot on who they play against, you know, and what kind of game, what the approach of the game is. And you can play Giroud to have that presence in the box. Great. He's played already Martial and Mbappe up front with Griezmann as a 10 behind. You could see at times some brilliance and other times you wondered if it could work properly over a long period of time. You could have that Martial or Mbappe, Coman and Griezmann and the three of them, you know, sort of mix him up and with a lot of fluidity, but you need space to do that, like you said. So I think it's very interesting. The more options, the better for him, as long as he can pick the right ones. And we saw the World Cup, especially in that first game against Australia, where Deschamps changed everything 2 days before the game and it was a disaster. So I'm all for all options, as long as your manager, your head coach, whoever he is, can pick the right one.
All right, let's go back to Cristiano. Because you can never have enough Cristiano on any kind of short podcast. But this was, I think it was his fourth appearance since he came back from his COVID shutdown.
Yeah.
I don't really count the Andorra game for obvious reasons. How did he look to you?
I just thought at times he looked really sharp. And we saw a few last-ditch tackles to prevent him from either scoring or get the cross getting to him, things like this. I just don't think he gets enough service.
Because you were praising Varane and Kimpembe to high heaven earlier.
Yeah, which they defend well on
Cristiano
him.
Cristiano still managed to get free and get away from them.
Yeah, and he had one.
Despite not getting good service, as you said.
Yeah, I just think that Cancelo and Guerrero should provide more service for Cristiano in the box. Crosses. What works today for Cristiano? As you said, he doesn't make those runs. He can't do those runs anymore. So early on in the game, he has a little 1-2 with Joao Felix and strikes from 20 yards. Okay, that's one part of his game. The other is being in the box. He's so good. He's the best header of the ball in the world.
Yeah. I wonder,
put the ball in the box for him.
I wonder, see, this goes back to being a smaller nation, not by history, but by population, by options. Because when you've got Cancelo and Guerrero, my temptation would be, man, let's go three at the backs. You guys bomb forward. And to some degree, he tried doing that with the way he set up. I think it was Danilo and what's his name? Carvalho, right? In front of the... But equally, one of your two center defenders is Josef Font, who I know is Cristiano's mate and everything, but he's in his mid-30s now. He is what he is, right? You don't have the option of going to a back three. So effectively, you have to play two defensive midfielders to allow yourself Guerrero and Cancelo. It just goes to say how much more limited your options are, even at a country like Portugal, because you simply don't have that many bodies. You have exceptionally good ones.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's so difficult to find the right pieces to fit together. So to shout out to my man, Mr. San, you know, who, after all, did win Euro 2016.
Yes, he
did. Blanking
and
on his name now.
Nations League, Fernando Santos.
Yeah.
And you know what? They had some good moments in the last 20 minutes when they pushed and Cristiano could have had a goal. And they think that Cancelo and Guerrero do really well. I just think that when you've got someone like him in the box, I think there are 22 crosses and I think 10 were successful, like efficient, like, you know, precise crosses, sorry. But still, I just don't think they base their game enough on Cristiano. And maybe the fact that both William Carvalho and Danilo Pereira started instead of just one and having someone a bit more creative with Bruno Fernandes maybe would help Cristiano a bit more.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search. Match. With Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/gab. Just go to Indeed.com/gab right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/gab. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? you need Indeed. Let's talk Spain, because they had a huge game against Switzerland. The whole fate of the Nations League group hangs in the balance. And we're joined by Sid Lowe now. Sid, Sergio Ramos, light and darkness, as is often the case with Sergio Ramos. He beats Gigi Buffon's mark for European players and international appearances, 177, which I find just unreal. Although, as we said before, you won't have long to enjoy it, because you know Cristiano's going to stick around even if he has to be wheeled out there to go and beat that one day. But he also misses two penalties, one of them an homage to Ademola Lookman.
Real homage.
Can you help me? You know this guy. You've seen him up close. You know him well for, 15 years now? Can you explain to me, because it's odd, because when we see defenders getting older, and obviously he's one of the greatest ever, but when you see them getting older, we sometimes see their physical skills on the wane, but mentally they remain very, very strong. With Sergio Ramos, it seems to be that physically he's fine, from what I can tell, but we've seen some poor decision-making, and I'm talking defensively here, more than the penalty, although why you would take that penalty in that way, the second one, after you've missed the first one, is beyond me.
Yeah, I mean, look, I think you're right. I think the penalty thing is really just anecdotal, isn't it? It happens. You can miss two penalties, and he'll take the next one. Bear in mind that before he missed these two penalties, he scored 25 in a row. So this isn't a guy that's taking penalties for the sake of it. It's a guy who's very, very good at taking penalties, and the second one was obviously particularly poor. But he's had really pretty good results for the most part taking that kind of penalty. In terms of his defending, you know, the curious thing is, and I think you're right, you watch Ramos and you think, this isn't a guy that's physically getting weaker. I think that's absolutely true. In fact, if anything, you look at the shape he's in, he might even look better than he ever has. He looks much more stripped down than ever before. Physically, I think he's in fantastic shape. And the other thing is, I think that the errors we're seeing from him are actually, in a way, very much in character. These are the kind of things we've seen from him throughout his career, that occasionally he'll come a long way out of the defence and it win the ball. But of course, if he doesn't quite win it, then he leaves a big gap behind. And you look throughout his career and there are moments like this, all the way through his career, moments where there's a little lacks of concentration or moments where he's not quite in the right place and therefore leaves a gap behind him. I think we've seen one of the qualities that Rafa Varane has had over all of these years, and I don't think it's been talked about enough, is how often he sweeps up for Ramos. Now, obviously, there's been a lot made, for example, of how much worse Varane is without Ramos's leadership, without his guidance through games. But actually, I think it would be fair to say that Ramos himself has benefited from Varane's pace, from his recovery ability over the years. And so I think the mistakes that Ramos is making now of being pulled out of position quite a long way, as he was against Switzerland at the weekend, are actually things that we've seen before. And I think this is a recurring thing with Ramos, is that quite often you will get to the point around about Christmas time and you'll think, Ramos really isn't playing well. That through the autumn and the beginning of the winter, he's actually not that great, in truth, positionally, in terms of, you know, kind of traditional elements of defending. But he has a fantastic ability to come good at those moments of the season where it really, really matters.
And that's what makes him one of the best ever. And
absolutely.
What you were saying before, Sid, too, also, it's probably also reflected in how he's got the second most red cards of any player in history. Jules, you wanted to ask about decisions made up front.
I mean, now it's a huge game against Germany, because they dropped those points as well against Switzerland. I was very, very surprised that Alvaro Morata didn't start that game, especially after how good he was against the Netherlands, or be in a friendly. Do you expect him to start against Germany? And did Luis Enrique made a mistake by not starting him on Saturday night?
I think he probably will start against Germany. I think Luis Enrique clearly is not sure at all about how he wants his forward line to look. I think he's tried false nines. He was trying a false nine with Ansu Fati. He tried a false nine, of course. If you look at that forward line, Oyarzabal, Dani Olmo, and Ferran Torres at the start of the game, none of those are really centre forwards, albeit Ferran Torres with Guardiola has played as a false nine a few times now. And the introduction of Alvaro Morata, I think, did change it. It did give them a focal point. It did make them look more dangerous. I don't know whether that's really hung. So at least it's not only hung on him, it's hung on the urgency of the situation and sort of, if you like, an acceleration throughout the team and the entire team responding better. But I think it's true that Luis Enrique isn't sure how he wants to do his forward line, but I think he will play Morata against Germany. Also, one of the things that's interesting about Luis Enrique is he just changes his team every time. every single team changes. You know, the personnel turnover is absolutely gigantic. I don't know if that's a lack of certainty or if it's about always altering his team to the opponents. He said before that he's driven by people's form as much as their actual base talent, if you like, in terms of picking teams. And I must admit, at times, I find it really quite disconcerting.
Well, but I mean, I think it's probably also a function of the fixture congestion and the global pandemic that we're in. I have less of a problem with it as long as you don't do it in a major tournament. They're not there yet. Quickly, Sid, how do you see things going on against Germany? And mostly, because there's a flavor, are people excited by this? Because I have to say, like, I know all the negativity of the Nations League. I kind of get excited at these internationals, even with nobody in the stands, knowing that there's a little something at stake. Like, I got well into the games. Is that the feeling in Spain, or are they just kind of like, you know, roll on La Liga?
Well, I personally am a little bit with you in the sense that I don't have a lot of patience with people who just seem to want to get rid of international football entirely. That said, in this scenario, in this situation with friendlies going on, that does feel a little
bit... I'm not talking the friendlies. Enough with the friendlies, Sid. I'm talking about the Nations League.
Are you calling the Nations League a non-friendly? I think the Nations League, Jamie Carragher said it, I thought it was a good way of putting it. These are semi-competitive games rather than full-on.
That's such nonsense. I'm not even going to honor that. First of all, I really like Jamie Carragher. I collaborate. I helped him out a little bit with his... He's got a book out with his latest book. So look, I've said nice things there. But in this occasion, I disagree with his semi-competitive.
What does that even mean? What does semi-competitive mean? I don't understand. What does that mean?
Let's have Sid. Sid agrees with him. Let's Sid answer this.
Yeah, okay. I suppose the answer to that question is you're trying to find a phrase that defines a competition that's not friendly, and no one is treating it as a friendly, but that nor does it feel, partly, I suppose, because we're only in the second season of it, partly because it's a short competition, it hasn't developed any tradition yet. There isn't a sense, and obviously I speak to you from a Spanish perspective, and by the sounds of it, there are at least some people in England, even if you don't, who agree with Jamie Carragher, so have a similar perspective.
I think many do.
I don't think there's a sense that this really, really matters. For example, last year, people were a little bit disappointed that Spain didn't get through to that Final Four. They didn't matter. It didn't matter that Spain... You know what? Earlier on today, I was trying to remember who the four teams that played the Final Four were. It took me a while to get to the last of them. It took me a while to even remember...
Do you remember them now? Let's test them. Do you remember them now?
It was Portugal, the Netherlands, England and Switzerland, I believe.
Oh, he's good. Yeah.
Well, I've got it now, but it took me a little while to remember that Switzerland was the other one. It took me a little while to remember who was it that had actually won. And I couldn't tell you the scores in any of those games. Genuinely, I couldn't. So I think the point is that a competition takes a while to develop a tradition. A competition that is short like this doesn't have a sense of attachment to it. A competition that is running in parallel to real competitions, and I realise that's a loaded phrase, and apologies for using it, possibly doesn't carry the same weight. And so, for example, in these last few games, of course it matters that Spain went to Germany and got a draw. Of course they're saying, oh, this is big, it feels like a big deal. You know, you've got to beat Germany at home to go through to the Final Four, and that's quite exciting. But it doesn't matter as much as the sense of whether or not Spain can build a team for next year's Euro. So this is very definitely a second-tier competition.
Here's my issue, though. But what you said there about building the team for the Euros next year. And we get this every single time before every World Cup and Euros. And sometimes I feel like we're never learning, right? These national team managers, they're not building teams. It's a nice idea. People talk about, ooh, what is the big revolution? We always attach this importance to the World Cup. It's not. It's about who gets hot for a random period of time for seven games every other years. They're not building anything.
Right, but they're trying things.
Hang on, that's a slightly different argument, because if we're talking about the argument about whether or not the Nations League matters, all right, I'll buy your argument that it's not about that, because it's about who's hot then. Okay, so let's apply that to the argument about the Nations League now. All people care about then is who's hot when the Euros come around. No one cares about who's hot now. Not to the same extent. Anyway.
Exactly. So that's why, rather than making this some part of some projection, because look, the alternative to this is what? Is playing friendlies, which I think are a necessary evil, I guess, but are generally irrelevant and don't stoke much interest. Or it's playing qualifiers. And the reality is, in Europe, with so many teams qualifying, the qualifiers basically suck, because you have a good team playing against a bad team, and they qualify halfway through, unless they're Italy, in which case they leave it late and sometimes don't qualify at all. And none of this is interesting. Even when it's a must-win game, it's not interesting. So
true, but you've just used the word. But you've one small, or maybe not quite so small, caveat. you've just used the word the alternative is qualifying. The alternative isn't qualifying because qualifying happens as well. So it's not an alternative. This is on top of the qualifiers.
Sure. So the alternative is friendlies. Is that better?
Yes.
Look, I know we live in pandemic time. Obviously, everything's different this year, right? But I go back to the Nations League last year, Jules, and we had packed stadiums. We had tremendous crowds. For me, it felt like that competition really hit the ground. Really hit the ground running.
Yeah, I agree.
And it was much better than what we had before.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I get the sort of like, you know, it's not as important as a World Cup or Euros, and it's more important than friendlies. Yeah. I get that. But we would not have. It's also a way of qualifying. We would not have the Scotland story, the North Macedonia story, without the
exactly.
Nations League either. And I think that's been very positive for football in general.
Yeah, and yeah. I think the real downside.
I also think, look, the other thing is we're at the start of this, and I think this is a key point here. We're at the start of this with a slightly complex structure, which people don't necessarily buy into yet. People haven't necessarily immediately kind of taken it on board. And I think, and the competition hasn't developed. What makes football worthwhile in a way is this sense of, I suppose, emulation, history, all of those kind of things. And of course, so the Nations League, I think by definition, isn't going to matter now. Maybe in 10 years' time, and we've had 10 winners of it, maybe we've had, you know, maybe Portugal go and win it. Well, they can't now because they can't get through the final, can they? Okay, but maybe, you know, maybe you get a country that wins 5 or 6 of the first 10. You know, by the 11th, it feels like a thing. It will never feel like a thing quite as much as the Europa League or the Champions League, but the Europa League or the World Cup. But I do think at the moment, at least, I think it is in that territory where it's semi-competitive, where it matters only a bit, where it has some competitive element, but it's not a thing yet, I don't think.
Well, I mean, I suppose a lot of it comes down to personal feeling. I will say this, though. The League Cup has been around, I believe, for more than 60 years. Lots of tradition, lots of history, and I can give a hoot about it. Could you? Are you big on the French League Cup? Do you miss it this year?
That tells you that things shift, because you don't give a hoot about the League Cup now.
Oh, but well, back when it was the Milk Cup or the Rumbelows Cup, and little Sid was running around.
You cared. The League Cup mattered then, because the League Cup at that point, when there wasn't a Champions League issue, when there wasn't, if you like, the packed calendar in the same way, the League Cup was not massively dissimilar to the FA Cup. Yes, it was second in the ranking, but teams took it seriously. Look at the teams that won it. This wasn't a competition won by a load of B teams.
Well, no, it's actually, you have bigger teams winning it now, actually, than
you
do in
the 80s. Yeah, but they win it with the B teams. They pissed around until the semi-final.
Right. I don't know.
Sid, tell me, can Spain beat Germany? Are they going to beat Germany? A Germany side who don't defend well, but have an incredible front three with Sané, Gnabry and Werner. Let's think that.
Incredible is kind of a strong word.
Really?
If you get good Sané, he's unplayable. Yeah. I will give you that.
Well, yeah.
Gnabry, he's good fine. Werner at center forward, in this formation with Yogi Löw.
Right.
Yeah,
no. All right, but sorry. Let me ask you a question. Sid, are they going to beat Germany?
Let me give you the answer from a Spanish point of view, because to be honest, I can't give you an answer from a German point of view. I've not seen enough of Germany. I don't know how good Germany are. But Spain is a national team at the moment, confronted by a lot of doubts. As I say, the team changes every game. There is a sense that this isn't quite going right, the results aren't coming, that they're not taking their chances, that they may well be dominating games in terms of possession, but it just doesn't quite come off. Their best performance, funnily enough, was actually against Germany away. That was one that people were most positive about, and most sense that something, the biggest sense of all of these games, that something was building, that there was an identity starting to emerge. And I think since then, there is this, the word I used before was disconcerting. It does sometimes feel, and I've got far too much respect for Luis Enrique and far too much belief in him knowing what he's doing to embrace this idea, or at least to embrace it fully. But it does feel, if you like, kind of from an outside perspective, that this feels improvised. Each game feels like a new plan and a new approach. And so, does Spain have players? Yes. Does Spain have the makings of a team? Yeah, maybe, but we haven't seen it yet. And it was put to me earlier by a mate that, you know, how many of the very best players in the world does Spain have in the team? Like the 3 or 4 best players in their position in the world. And the answer might well be none, apart from Ramos.
It's a bit harsh, is it? Is that true?
I guess Thiago. Jules? When Thiago is fit and plays.
Thiago is the only one we could think of, and Thiago obviously at the moment is not fit. Thiago is the only one that we could think of, but in his position, is he even the best 3 or 4 in the world? beyond that, you know, it could be that with time that we think this about Ferran Torres. It could be that with time we think this about Ansu Fati. And I don't know. I'm projecting young players who could be very, very good indeed. Obviously, once upon a time, we would have said this about Busquets, but we don't anymore.
All right, okay, listen, Sid. I love to indulge your negativity about Spain because, you know, you had the privilege of being in Spain when they twice won the European Championships and won the World Cup and all that stuff. But while you were talking, I was thinking about how many countries can claim to have more than two or three guys who are in the top three or four in the world? Apart from France, yeah, who are kind of in their own category. And look, I mean, I look at England. Do you want to make a case for Harry Kane and Trent Alexander-Arnold? Fine. But I think it kind of stops there. I look at Belgium, Kevin De Bruyne, hey, I'll give you that. But beyond that, is Lukaku maybe a stretch? Yeah. Maybe meh. I look at Italy. I don't know that we have anybody who's in the top three or four in the world, frankly. Mm. I hope Leo Bonucci doesn't complain, but no, reality, time passes for everyone, Leo. I don't know how, but does Holland have anybody other than Van Dijk?
Germany have.
How many guys are in the top three or four in the world?
Neuer, Kimmich. Oh. I mean, I know he's injured now, but let's imagine Neuer as well.
Neuer, who's the second best German keeper, in my opinion. But yeah,
yeah, but
I mean, did you see what I'm driving
at? Two or three.
It's international football. And the club football we see will always feature, the high-end club football, and I know you agree with this, will always feature better players, better coached teams, I mean, at the top end, right? Better players, better chemistry, and better coached teams because they have more time to work together and they have more talent, right?
Yes. I think, and also, look, you came in by saying, the two European Championships and the World Cup for Spain, right? And this, of course, is the inescapable context, even now, of this Spanish national team. And this is part of the problem, that the response to the Spanish national team is always, oh, remember when we were the best? Not just the best, but when we won three in a row. And it's curious because, of course, Spain have gone to tournaments and got them horribly wrong more times now, as in more in a row than the ones that they won. You know, that success is a long way away now.
Which is also a reflection of most of Spain's international footballing history, right?
Of course.
I mean, Spain were perennial, apart from Luis Suarez's Euros.
But it's even worse, Gab. That's the thing. So you've got the Euros that they win in 2012, which, of course, is the run of three, right? The end of the run of three. They go to World Cup in 2014. They don't get out of the group. In fact, they've already knocked out after the second game. In 2016, they do get out of the group, but they get knocked out in the first knockout round by Italy.
Yeah.
In 2018, they get knocked out in the first knockout game by Russia. So this is worse than Spain used to be. Spain used to be the team that got to the quarters. This is a Spain team that doesn't even get through a knockout round anymore.
All right. Sid Lowe, your negativity means you're channeling your inner Mark Ogden. We're going to have to leave it there.
Cheerio.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code Spotify for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
All right, enough of that. Time for something much better. Time for some quick hits.
Let's go, guys.
Germany come from behind to beat Ukraine 3-1 as Leroy Sané scores a worldie and Timo Werner bags two. Jules, signs of progress from Uncle Yogi?
Not really, no. They still can't defend. That's the thing. I mean, he can try three at the back with Robin Koch playing as a holding midfielder, it looked like, or another centre-back, really, and have Ginter as right wing-back, another centre-back as well. As many centre-backs as you want on the pitch, that will not help you defending better. As you think going forward, they're fantastic, and we saw Sané with a wonderful goal, as you said. Werner, Gnabry, all of that. Plus, imagine the ones who were not playing, like Kai Havertz. But defensively, man.
Imagine if Sané were fit all the time and he did this stuff all the time.
England won't be going to the Final Four after losing 2-0 to Belgium away on Sunday. Gab, opinion seems to be a bit divided over the performance and the game.
Well, the argument is Belgium scored two goals. That, you know, one of them was deflected. The other one was a free kick by Dries Mertens. Gorgeous free kick, but it was probably never fouled to begin with. I don't know, Jules. I look at this England team and Grealish looked really good at times, but one thing that convinces me is this England team has to play with pace, that they have enough match winners or very yeah. quick players, whether it's Sancho, whether it's Sterling, obviously they're not available. When you play Grealish and Mount together behind Kane, you don't have that element to your game. And I think that's something Southgate's going to want to revisit and address. At the back, too, you know, you miss Maguire when he's not there, at least for his passing at the back. And yeah. in midfield, when it's Rice and Henderson, not much passing going on there as well. It's when you need Calvin Phillips or somebody like that. And no, Harry Winks is not the answer. So it's weird. It's one of those teams that's so strong in certain positions and in others, so lacking in depth.
But how can you have Harry Kane, one of the best strikers in the world, and have scored 3 goals in 5 games in the Nations League, 2 penalties and 1 deflected shot?
Well, because
you don't create enough. You don't do anything enough. Yesterday, you 2-0 down at halftime. Who does Southgate bring on? Harry Winks. Man, come on. In which world? How? Why do you do that?
Don't be a hater and let's talk about Belgium instead.
It made no sense. It made no sense. And Southgate should not have done that, sir.
Let's show some love to Roberto Martinez in Belgium, because to me, Jules, this team seemed more grown up, more capable of managing leads than in the past.
And I think they're more mature. They controlled that game really well. Albeit, I think they were helped a bit by England. Even if Jason Denayer, for example, said, you know, they put us into trouble. I still think they've gone a long way until, like you said, knowing how to manage games, leads, expectations. They were so well in control, so well in possession when they had the ball. They still created the best chance.
Yeah, they still chose for a third. Yeah.
Yeah, so good on them. And without Eden Hazard. And by the way, I don't know when Hazard comes back. How he does?
Can he get in the team?
How does he fit? Where do you change something?
Does the magical Dries Mertens keep him out?
Exactly. We'll see. Italy beat Poland 2-0. But Gav, we can't give Mancini any credit, right? Because he wasn't there. No, I'm only joking. They were impressive, weren't they? Although it was Poland. Come on.
I heard Poland, Lewandowski, Szczesny. Well, you got an issue there? Poland were very poor. I thought Italy played really well. 20 players out. And Mancini does deserve a lot of credit because he has really changed the mentality of this team. I know it's thrown out there. They go out there, they try to dominate. They don't have great strikers, although Insigne played really well on the wing. So,
yeah. Immobile wasn't there, though.
Sorry?
Immobile wasn't there.
Yeah, but even when he's there, no, they don't score a lot. But like the best thing about this team is the midfield. And I don't, you got to go way back to find the last time that was true of an Italy side. But Barella, Locatelli in the middle of the park.
Locatelli was
wonderful. They looked really, really good. Yeah. And they've turned the corner. Now, let's see if he can keep it together when all the regulars who are unavailable come back. Mm. Mohamed Salah tests positive for COVID-19 while on international duty in Egypt. Now, he's going to need to self-isolate until he tests negative, and worryingly, he's also reported mild symptoms. Jules, he was at his brother's wedding, and there's footage all over social media of him dancing without a mask. At one point, it looks like he's up on a chair. It looks like they're doing the Hora, which I didn't know was an Egyptian thing. And there's very little social distancing going on. Hundreds of people there. It's not a good look, and it's another headache for Jurgen Klopp's growing injury list.
Yeah, it's not a good look, and I think he would be right to be disappointed by Mo Salah's attitude and behavior. I know it's his brother's wedding, and you know you don't want to miss that or anything like this. But this is a global pandemic. You have to be careful. You can't do anything crazy like that.
No, and you're a professional and you're paid by look, he's a very likable guy, he's a great guy.
Yeah, of course.
He made a mistake, move on. But this is a serious mistake, which I think is going to cost Liverpool. And by the way, the mayor of the town where they're from, where the wedding was, coming out and saying, well, the wedding lasted under an hour and they wore masks throughout. Okay, you know what? Stop lying, because we've all seen the video. Yeah. It's simply not true.
But for Liverpool and Klopp, quickly, in the same week, losing Alexander-Arnold, Gomez and Salah for different reason and different length of time, it's a hell of a...
Especially when you're really without Fabinho, Thiago Alcantara and Virgil van Dijk.
Exactly. Gab, Ukraine played against Germany despite having 5 players testing positive in the squad. Norway's game against Romania was cancelled because 1 player tested positive. Can you explain this, and how is this possible that this happened, like so different outcome, I guess. And are they going to play against Austria on Wednesday in Norway?
So the thing to remember is that everywhere in the world, public health authorities always have the last word. So the public health authorities in Norway determined, ooh, you have 1 positive test, but we think it's unsafe for you to travel.
Yep.
And public health authorities in Germany and in Ukraine said, well, you've got 5. That's okay. We'll take these guys out of the squad and the rest of you guys will be tested and travel. I'm not a doctor. It's not my place. It's not football's place to decide what's right. What's interesting is UEFA will probably force Norway to forfeit the game. Yeah. They can still finish top of the group. They have to beat Austria away on Wednesday. Now, what they're doing, I think this is a great story, is they got the under-21 coach, because he can't use any of the guys because they're all in self-isolation. Yeah. And he's going to call up a bunch of other random Norwegians, I guess named like Trond and Vidar or whatever. I don't know. But basically, it's like a Norwegian B team made up of players who weren't in the squad going to Austria. I think it's going to be hard for neutrals not to back Norway, because that would be some story.
We have to watch it.
Holland beat Bosnia 3-1 on Sunday. Jules, you're going to stop hating on poor Frank de Boer after this result.
Well done. Well done. He won a game. Well done. After, what, six games? He was always going to win at some point. So what else do you want me to say? It was Bosnia.
Come on.
Adama Traore has started just three league games this season for Wolves, and the Athletic reports that he feels it might be something to do with his contract extension negotiations, because they've stalled. His deal expires in 2023. Gab, does he have the wrong agent, do you think?
Oh, Jules, you're being naughty there, because, of course, Adama Traore is not represented by Jorge Mendes or Jesse Foot. He's represented by a man named Rodri Baster from a company called Promo Sport. And I think right now, if the negotiations don't go well, Wolves might think he's a bit of a Baster. Get it? See what I did? Look, I think people are going to talk. What I want to remind people of is leaving somebody out as part of a contract negotiation. You know, it's leverage clubs have. It's not something they should do.
No, but it happens a lot.
It happens more than it should. It makes agents very angry. I don't want to believe there's anything more sinister in it. I also want to point out that his deal expires in June 2023. It's great to get all your ducks in a row and get things done early. But equally, that's a lot of time to go.
Expensive
time. You know, 2.5 years. So I think from Wolves' perspective, sit tight. Try to work out a deal. I don't want to believe it has to do with Mendes and Wolves and whatever.
Yeah.
And I also think Rodri Baster realized that, hey, my guy could be playing at a different level and making more money elsewhere.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Lolly Focus Pops or Lolly Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Former Barcelona director Javier Bordas, who is close to Bartomeu, the departed Bartomeu, he said in an interview with Mundo Deportivo that the club had a 100 million euro option to sign Kylian Mbappe in 2017, when, of course, he ended up moving to Paris Saint-Germain on that fake loan deal, which wasn't really a loan deal. But that the club chose Ousmane Dembele instead, because apparently Ousmane Dembele works for the team, whereas the selfish Mbappe works for himself.
Of course.
He also said that they gave up their pursuit of Erling Haaland because he, quote, wasn't the right fit, not really a Barcelona DNA-style player. Now, he blamed Robert Fernandez and Pep Segura, who were in the club's technical department at the time, for these decisions. What do you make of this?
So the Mbappe, I can tell you, it's not possible. It's not true, in the sense that Monaco at the time, where Mbappe was playing, had an agreement with Real Madrid first for 180 million. They had no options with anyone else. Why would they put an option on Kylian Mbappe anyway in the first place? And we don't do release clauses in France either. And then when Mbappe said that he wanted to go to Paris and not to Real Madrid just then yet, they had the same deal pretty much with PSG, nothing near the 100 million anyway.
And is it true that Ousmane Dembele is a good guy who works for the team, presumably from his rehab bed? And whereas
he works for the team on PlayStation, that's for sure. But then I just think that Ousmane Dembele has great talent and great qualities, very different to Kylian Mbappe in many ways. But don't tell me you could have signed Mbappe for 100 million. That's not the telling the truth to your fans and to people. You know.
You know what this smells like, because like. Obviously, this guy was close to Bartomeu, and he talked about how Bartomeu things went wrong and everything was great, and then the pandemic came. I was going to stick up for, and I don't have a problem with that. Then he's going to throw these two other dudes under the bus.
Robert Fernandez, but don't make things up.
I don't know if he's making things up, but he's not necessarily in the loop on all the information, and I don't think he's helping it, because in the end, who appointed Robert Fernandez and Pep Segura? It was Bartomeu, right? So you think you're helping him, but in reality, you're making yourself seem silly. So I don't know. I think this badly backfired, and I think anybody associated with Bartow isn't going to be involved with the next Barcelona board.
I agree. You have to go all the way back to Thursday, but Scotland stunned Serbia, beating them on penalties for a place at the Euros. Gab, that was pretty dramatic. Amazing.
Yeah, well, we've established Sid Lowe doesn't like this kind of stuff, but no. I really enjoyed it. It was dramatic.
Yeah.
It was an in or out, mano a mano game. It was exciting. Look, I think you go through this player for player, you know, Serbia, this is a huge, huge, huge miss for them.
Yeah.
Because, you know, they're not just a little bit better, they're a lot better, man for man.
Yeah, yeah, of course.
But
yeah.
You know what?
It's
about being bigger than the sum of your parts. And Scotland were that. It's their first major tournament since 1998, incredible, when our pal Craig Burley famously scored at the World Cup.
Yeah.
Whole generations missed out on seeing Scotland in a tournament. I think it's good. It's one of the reasons I like the expanded Euros, is because you have teams like this. You've got more countries involved. I don't think Scotland are going to go there and embarrass themselves. I don't think they will be the worst team at the Euros necessarily. So I think it's fantastic.
Yeah.
And how sweet afterwards, all those videos that came out, and I can boogie and whatever.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
well done to them.
It's part of that too. You know?
Yeah.
Jules, sticking with the Euro playoffs, I know you love your Tekkers, so help me celebrate Dominik Szoboszlai.
Amazing talent, 20 years of age, certainly one of the next big thing. And well done, Hungary, because he carried that team through this.
He's one of Jesse Marsh's boys at Salzburg.
Yes, Salzburg, doing so well. Scored the winner in added time in that game after they were 1-0 down for pretty much most of the game against Iceland. And yeah, he almost ran all the pitch and had a lovely shot on the edge of the box. That's why he's so good at the way he hits the ball, that sort of creativity. But it's the personality, the character, you know, a bit of arrogance as well in him. He's so elegant to watch play, and he's been amazing, and well done to Hungary. They will be with France's group at the Euros with Germany and Portugal. So not an easy group, but hey, 4 years ago they were in Portugal and they finished ahead of them at the Euros 2016. So who knows?
It's weird because, I mean, it feels to me like Hungary haven't been relevant in football terms for a long time, even though, of course, they were at the Euros and even got out of the group in 2016. And, you know, I think of, like, relevant football Hungary, and I think back to 1982 and when they beat El Salvador 10-1. Oh, and by the way, all you people talk about, oh, the expanded World Cup stinks. Oh, look, there's going to be all these bad teams in the World Cup. You know what? Back in 1982, when there were only 24 teams, you had somebody losing 10-1. Okay, so why don't you chill and learn your history there? But anyway, I digress. No, great to have them back. And and what? Like all good teams, they have an Italian manager.
Elfrida. I knew that was coming. I didn't want to say it, but Szoboszlai would be the one to keep an eye on that.
And as well as their manager, Marco Rossi.
Of course, of course. Argentina and Paraguay drew 1-1 on Friday night, and Leo Messi was not happy. Does he have a point, Gab?
He kind of does. Paraguay, and by the way, next time you're on the FC show with Ale Moreno, ask him about Nestor Ortigosa, who is his absolute nemesis. he's a Paraguayan midfielder who, you know, had a bit of dirty in him. And look, the game gets a bit physical between Paraguay and Argentina, which is what you expect. It's, you know, CONMEBOL qualifier, the greatest qualifying spectacle, I think, in sport. So Messi was unhappy because of a late penalty, whatever. But the big thing, and also Miguel Almirón dived, I think, pretty obviously to get a penalty.
So
and
too,
they do
yeah.
have VAR.
And then they had a goal. Obviously, Messi scored a goal that was
that's
disallowed.
That's the thing. He had a goal disallowed where, you know, supposedly there was a foul earlier, but it was something like 25 seconds and 8 passes earlier. Now, there are directives for sort of phase of play and how far back you can go. This didn't feel right. This really didn't feel right because it was way before. And, you know, chuck in a Brazilian referee, and all of a sudden in Argentina you get wound up, and Messi. It's a big story there.
Yeah.
But, look, I mean, I'm sure he'll live to fight another day.
Yeah, I agree.
Albania beat Kazakhstan 3-1, but Albania's keeper, Erik Berisha, who plays for Spal in Italy, last year in Serie A, he's going to want to forget this one very quickly. Why?
Oh, man, it's a dream goal from Aybol Abiken, the Kazakhstan striker, because he's straight from kickoff. He loved Berisha straight from kickoff, which is the goal that you always dream to score, that no one ever scores, apart from in Kazakhstan.
He's not going to forget this.
That's incredible. 20 years after making his professional debut, Goran Pandev scores the winner against Georgia that sends North Macedonia to the Euros for the first time ever. Gab, I know you love him. I know you love him. Give him some love. Show him some love.
I do, because his career started so long ago, and he was supposed to be the next best thing, and then he was very good, but then he wasn't, and then you see him today. In fact, he looks today like he looked 10 years ago. He looks like an accountant. He doesn't look like a guy who should be playing football, but he's a tremendous leader, tremendous footballer, key player in his own way in Mourinho's treble-winning side.
Yeah, yeah.
So well done, North Macedonia. Welcome to the Euros. Welcome to Euro 2020. And well done, Goran Pandev.
37, man. Legends never die. You know that.
38 in July.
Yeah.
Right. That's all we've got time for today. Thank you so much for joining us. Should we come back on Thursday? Do this all over again?
Yeah, big time.
All right. Why not? Till then, love the game. Love yourself. Love your neighbor.